Okay, we have come to the next item of mindfulness for young adult session, and that is a discussion on certain sutta. Actually, these days we are discussing Kagga Visana Sutta, which is available in Kuddaka Nikaya Sutta Nipata. Now, Sutta Nipata is one of the ancient, it is actually accepted as one of the most recent or ancient books according to the Pali canon, and it consists of various very beautiful suttas, like very popular Ratana Sutta, and then Karaniya Metta Sutta, Mangala Sutta. So all are from actually Sutta Nipata. Similarly, Kagga Visana Sutta is also from Sutta Nipata, and it also consists of many verses. Each verse is attributed by the commentary to a Pacheka Buddha, who is actually telling the story behind his enlightenment. So as we discussed, so there are different types of attainment, and the most highest is the Sammasambuddha. So that is the Gautama Buddha, that we all keep him as our teacher. And then the next is the Pacheka Buddha, and the other one is the Sravaka Buddha. So the difference between these different levels are like Sammasambuddha is fully enlightened, self-enlightened, and is capable of explaining the Dhamma to the others, so that others also are capable of realizing the Dhamma, realizing the enlightenment, attain the enlightenment. On the other hand, Pacheka Buddhas, so they too self-realized, self-enlightened, but they can't explain well to the others about the Dhamma or the path, so that others would be able to attain the same enlightenment. So therefore, that's a big difference. Even though they are self-enlightened, they are not capable of explaining it to the others, to the level of a Sammasambuddha, so that Others can't simply follow these Pacheka Buddhas. And then we come to the Sravaka Buddha, where they actually are not self-enlightened. They are actually the followers of Sammasambuddha, and they learn Dhamma from Sammasambuddha. They recognize their Dhamma. They listen to Dhamma. And nowadays we are reading Dhamma. And then they are practicing the Dhamma. So they have to strive, they have to spend some time, a lot of time, depending on the person. So they practice the Dhamma, and then they are able to enlighten. So this is, and again they are able to further explain the Dhamma to the others as well. So it depends on the individual, and therefore there are various levels of attainment, we can say. Now these verses are attributed to the Pacheka Buddhas. Actually, this is coming in the commentary, but not mentioned in the Sutta Nipata itself, that these are attributed to Pacheka Buddhas. Anyway, the messages given by these verses are quite beautiful, and again somewhat practical, and it is applicable to any person who is basically inclined towards some spiritual life. And the emphasis is for seclusion. So, you know, there are various levels of practice and various levels of seclusion one can recognize. Now, being among the others and trying to practice is somewhat difficult, and therefore people are trying to find a secluded place, maybe a forest, maybe a monastery, maybe a temple. So likewise, there are various remote areas where the hustle and bustle of the town, city is not available. So you are fairly having the natural environment as much as possible, and you get that very peaceful surrounding. And then you are going there, and you may be alone. And as a result of that you get this Kaya Viveka, what we call as the seclusion, the physical seclusion. And actually nowadays also people are making it. They go for a picnic or they go for a vacation, maybe even fly to another country. And they may be going to a beach. So likewise, they like to stay alone and having some secluded life. But there is a difference once it comes to the second stage, that what we call as the Chitta Viveka. Well, even though the body is now secluded and there are no any other associations from the other human beings, still the mind may be occupied with various thoughts. So that is what typically happens. Even though we are alone, mind is not alone. It is attached to so many things. We are thinking about the past, what happened in our office, what happened with our friends, what happened with our kids, and what we did several years ago. So likewise, various memories, past incidents are coming to the mind. So we again and again start to associate them. As a result of that, mind gets fairly occupied. And on the other hand, there are various plans in the mind, and they are also quite significant and important. And so we spend a lot of time in thinking about them, planning. And so this also another part of our mind where we are quite fond of thinking about the future, what's going to happen, various uncertainties, and all those sorts of things we start to think. So again, the mind is occupied. Even though the body is fairly secluded, mind is extremely occupied. And sometimes we are watching the TV and reading books and maybe newspapers. Likewise, we keep the mind occupied even though the body is secluded. So this is not the proper way of Chitta Viveka. Rather, the opposite has to be practiced according to the Buddha. So how to keep the mind also secluded? Is it possible to keep our mind free from craving, free from lust, free from hatred, free from any entangling thoughts, any other objects which is quite attractive and tempting, and all those sorts of objects? Is it possible to keep away? And is it possible to reduce the hindrances, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, regret and remorse, restlessness, doubts, and all these sorts of different, covering defilements? Is it possible to keep away? Now, this is what the achievement of the Chitta Viveka, where one is trying to calm down the hindrances, subside the hindrances. Temporarily, now hindrances are subsided. As a result of that, the mind is also experiencing calmness, tranquility. Now, this is the second achievement in the seclusion. Now, we come to the last part, that is the Upadhi Viveka. Even though mind is secluded to some extent from the, say, defilements or the hindrances, still the potential is there to again occupy the mind, again to overwhelm the mind by various hindrances, various obstacles, various defilements. So if one were to fully liberated or to have complete seclusion, the utmost kind of seclusion, then Buddha mentioned that one has to have a mind which is free from defilements, and there is not even a potential to arise defilements. And there are no any kind of sedimentation or sediments of the defilements. There are no latent tendencies, no any dispositions. So likewise, there are some subtle layers, levels that Buddha mentioned. And even those have to be eradicated, uprooted. Then only one can say one is experiencing the best form of seclusion, that is called the Upadhi Viveka. Now, in Vipassana practice, so the three stages are in a way covered And the first one, the physical seclusion, the second, the mental seclusion, and the third, the seclusion from various defilements. So the defilements are no more arising. So therefore, in a way, we can see kind of a gradual path. And these Paccheka Buddhas, so they are capable of achieving all three sides. But they too, at the beginning, sometimes spend kind of a lay life. Now in this sutta, or in this Kankavisana Sutta, the seclusion is highlighted, emphasized. And time to time, various Paccheka Buddhas are explaining how their achievement, or how they have enlightened, and what is the theme of their practice. And this verse mentioning that dussangaha pabbajitapi eke ato gahatta garaham garang mavasanta appo sukho paraputte suhutva eko chare kagga visana kappu. So basically, this is a story happened to a king. And this king actually maintaining a kingdom, and he had a queen, but unfortunately the queen passed away. Now the king is continuing his reigning, and the ministers actually propose that you have to marry again, that you have to find another queen, because the kingdom has to continue and you also have to have a companion, so you better remarry. And they proposed. And then the king agreed, and he asked to find out whether suitable woman is available, suitable queen is available. And then the ministers informed there is another close by kingdom. There the king has passed away while the queen is pregnant. So now a pregnant queen is available, and the proposal has given to the pregnant queen, and she mentioned, now I am pregnant, so it would be difficult, and sometimes the king may not like that situation. So I might come after the delivery, so if the king can wait, and he can then marry me. So the queen also given her consent with the condition. So the king has to wait till she delivers the prince. And if not, the king can find out another queen. So this queen is also in a way somewhat reasonable, and she has sent a message to the king. Once the message has come to the king, the king was somewhat anxious and fallen in love with this queen, and he sent a message, now even while you are pregnant, I like to marry you. I like to keep you as the queen, even you as a pregnant queen. Now she agreed, and she came back to this kingdom, and now king has married this pregnant woman, the pregnant queen. Now they are living, and the king was a very righteous person, and he has given all the comforts to this queen, and she delivered a son. So once the son is born, so the king has made any discrimination. Rather, the king was quite fond of this young prince, and he is fondling him and considering him as his own son, and quite very affectionate with this son. But unfortunately, there are other queens, not the main queen or the chief queen, but there are other queens to the king, and they start to become jealous about this situation, because king consider this prince as his own son and contributing lot and praising and giving all the comforts to this queen and the prince. And the other queens therefore start to become jealous. So they thought, we need to break up this relationship. So what they did was, so they informed the prince that this is not your father. You are from someone else. So that father has passed away. This is not your father. So likewise, they made the prince's mind somewhat corrupted. Now therefore, again they mention that don't just obey this king, and he is not your real father, and you don't need to have any love or affection towards this person because he is a stranger, he is not your real father. So these other queens actually made the little prince's mind corrupted. And after that, actually the prince has lost his confidence, trust, love towards the king. And now king is not getting that affection from the little prince. Now what happened was the king become somewhat unhappy about the situation, disgusted about the situation, and he left the palace and he wanted to become a monk. When he actually was leaving the palace, there were other ministers also joined with him. Now they all going to a far forest, and they all become monks, ascetics, you can say, ascetics. So while living there, now there are many other people, because this is a king, all previous king, so there were many subordinates, and they recognize, so this is the king, and this king was a very righteous king. So therefore the people, civilians, start to carry a lot of food, fruits and various items, because this person is a very righteous person, now he has become a monk, so we have to support him as much as possible. So they start to carry a lot of food and other items to the monastery. Now king, what he did was, so according to the seniority, so he has distributed all these requisites. Now the senior ascetics get all the best items, but not the junior ascetics. Now the junior ascetic starts to complain. So this king is, or rather this the chief monk, is giving all the best items to this all every time to the seniors. He is not giving us anything. So, but we are the ones handling all the duties of the monastery, and we are the ones spending a lot of time and supporting in many different ways. But he is not supporting us. He is not looking after us. He is not giving the best item to us. So he is doing some discrimination. So they started to complain. Now the chief monk, the previous king, now is thinking, while I was in the palace, even though I have contributed to the best of my ability to that queen and to his son, so this son started to have some sort of a misunderstanding about me, and many others started to have some sort of misunderstanding. They are not satisfied, even though I am doing my best. I did my best. Every time I tried to satisfy them. I have given enough comforts, luxuries to everyone, to the queen, to the son, to this prince. But they are not satisfied. And now he went to the forest, and now there are monks, and even these monks are not satisfied. I can't even satisfy these monks. Monks also complain. While I am a layman, lay people are also complaining, telling that I am not doing enough, I am not supporting them enough. And now I am coming back to the forest as an ascetic. Now these other ascetics are also complaining, I am not doing enough. And now actually the chief priest become somewhat dispassionate about the other ascetics. Now both situations are somewhat similar. It is very difficult to satisfy others. Even though you are doing your best, it is very difficult to satisfy others. Now, after this sort of idea came to the chief priest's mind, the ex-king, so he felt that I have to go away from these people. I have to go for a further seclusion. It is not necessary or not necessary to be with these kind of people. I better leave them. So what he did was he leave aside all these other ascetics. He went alone and he started to practice further, thinking that it is quite difficult to satisfy. You know, there is a very interesting Buddha sermon called, it's a sutta called Rattapala Sutta. So there are one monk called Rattapala explaining to a king, Kauravya. He's explaining to the king a very good lesson. Now, what he's mentioned is, Uno loko atitto tanha dasu. So this is one statement that the monk, Arahant Rattapala, is explaining to the king. So this world is always unsatisfied, never fulfilled, and always keeping the craving as the companion, and as a result, so they become slaves to the craving. So when he tried to explain, so the king didn't understand that. Even though Venerable Rattapala tried to explain, the king didn't understand that. Then he asked to further elaborate it. Then the Venerable Rattapala, Arahant Rattapala, gave a very interesting simile. So he asked, now suppose the king, you have this kingdom. So it's a very successful, fairly good kingdom. So you are having all the luxuries here. Good people are there, and good transport is there. You have a lot of wealth. Everything is available. But assume that there is a minister, quite faithful, coming from far distant, and he comes and gives a message mentioning that there is a very successful kingdom, where fairly prosperous kingdom in that far direction, say in the east direction. You can easily defeat them and you can easily acquire that kingdom. So why don't you go and acquire that kingdom? So this faithful minister coming and giving you a message. So what are you going to do? Now the Venerable Rattapala is asking from the king. So the then king mentioned, definitely Bhante, I will go and attack the kingdom. I will go and acquire that kingdom because I am quite faithful on this minister, and he is confirming that I have the capacity to go with my armies, and then I would be able to capture that kingdom. So I go and acquire that kingdom as well. Now, Venerable Rattapala mentioned, okay, assume that after that, there's another minister, again quite faithful. He is coming from the west direction. And he comes and inform you that there is a kingdom in the west which is quite prosperous and have all the beauties, very good resources are available, and you can easily acquire that kingdom. So now this minister also gives you a message. What are you going to do? Now the king is replying, definitely Bhante, I am going to acquire that kingdom. Why not? So I am going and acquiring that kingdom. I will take my armies and I do a kind of a threat. And if they surrender, I can acquire it. If not, I'll do a war, implement a battle, and then I acquire the kingdom. Why not? Then likewise, then Venerable Rattapala mentioning another messenger coming from the north direction, the same answer from the king. Another messenger coming from the south direction, talking about a kingdom available in the south direction. The same answer from the king. So now, Venerable asking from the king, now you see the king, great king, even though you have a very prosperous kingdom, when another person come and inform you that there is a prosperous kingdom available in another direction, that you are going and acquiring it. Because you are not yet fulfilled. Even though you have a lot of luxuries, a lot of wealth, you are not satisfied. So this is why the Buddha has mentioned uno loko. This world is insufficient. This world is always feeling insufficient, not enough. And therefore people are becoming slaves to the craving. So this is why Buddha has mentioned this Dhamma. So then the king has understood that. So similarly in this verse, so this king, and he understood, even though he has given enough to this new queen and to her son, even though he is not his own son, he has done the best. But the people are not satisfied. And the other queens are also not satisfied. So they start to become jealous of the queen, and they are the ones make the situation. And they are not satisfied. So always they are asking, 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 never satisfied. Now he became a monk, an ascetic, and while managing the monastery, so the monks are also not satisfied. Now he received a lot of requisites from the devotees, and now he is distributing among the monks, and always monks are asking the best. Even though enough is, lot of things are given, they are also not satisfied. They are complaining, why don't you give the best thing to me? Why have you given the best thing to another person, another monk, another ascetic? So the other monks are also always complaining. Now this is actually make this chief ascetic's mind quite dispassionate about the both situations. So he became secluded, and he understood the problem of having craving. So this craving has to be uprooted. Craving is the main symptom, the main cause. So even though a lot of wealth is available to a person, he still feels unhappy, unsatisfied, not fulfilled. So therefore, he left these other ascetics and he became secluded. He started to practice, understanding the consequences of having craving, and he was able to uproot craving and become self-enlightened, and he became a Paccheka Buddha. So therefore he mentioned, even some monastics are hard to please. So too householders living at home, being unconcerned about others' sons, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So he therefore mentioned, it is very difficult to satisfy lay people, similarly difficult to satisfy the monks or the ascetics. No point of fondling others' sons. Let me be alone, practice alone. So it's in a way very interesting story, and sometimes these are practical situations. And you all have, as lay people, probably you may understood, sometimes it is difficult to satisfy your husband. Sometimes it is difficult to satisfy your wife. And sometimes it is difficult to satisfy your children. And sometimes it is difficult to satisfy your, say, friends and relatives. They are always asking, asking the best. If you are giving the best, if you are doing the best, still not enough. They think that you have something more to give. You haven't done the best. Why don't you give the best? So they are always complaining. So sometimes in the monastery, the same situation. You might think that once you become homeless and you attain a monkhood, the situation would be different. But this verse mentioned the truth. So I myself experienced that. Now we also receive a lot of requisites, and even though we are trying to distribute them, say, evenly, the best requisites are sometimes available, but still the monks are complaining. Why don't you give this? Why don't you give that? Why don't you ask that? So you are not doing enough. You are not a good administrator. You are not a good abbot. So you should give more and more while you are, say, doing your job. So we are not getting enough requisites. We are not receiving enough dark chocolate. So likewise, you know, there are various complaints, even from monks. Same situation. Even though they are monks, they are not completely free from craving. So till that craving is available in the people's mind, irrespective of they are lay people or monks, they start to complain. That is the nature. Therefore, this is the reason, this is the point this Paccheka Buddha is highlighting, and that made him to uproot craving. He understood the problem, the cause of suffering. He understood the cause of unsatisfactoriness. That is the craving, tanha. So after recognizing the cause of suffering, see, he uprooted craving and he became enlightened, Paccheka Buddha. So this is the story and the Dhamma that I like to share with you. With that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
Avasari Mante.
Yeah.
Currently there are 7 questions. Question number 1. This is mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Venerable Mante, I am the same person who goes to the stillness, and you instructed me last week to make this life a platform for relaxing the mind. Thank you so much for that advice. With regards to this, this week's practice, these are the following observations. At times, I was stepping out of stillness. Happens with the point where I get interested in a thought. There is a particular type of thought I always tend to get entangled in. It belongs to the category of karma sanya. What I noticed was that although I know thoughts or perceptions are not real, I tend to get attracted to it. Mentally, I could see myself enjoying it. I could see myself creating a world of it and getting inside of that world. At times, even before the world is created, when the raw thought comes, I notice there's a tendency from my side to bend to that side. I know I'm supposed to see this as a third-person viewpoint, yet mind creates myself and the world around it. Often I find supportive thoughts come into play as poor me and use it as an excuse to support creating the world. Third-person view can still be created although the world is created, but fine line is enjoyment from mind and pleasure from mind takes over the experience than watching what is happening as a mere observer. Appreciation and much merits. Bhante with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so actually as you have mentioned, it is quite tricky business in a way, because mind is extremely tricky in this situation. Actually, when we recognize that the mind is trying to create a person, create a personality, and we are able to stop that or we are able to discard that. But from another side, then mind starts to trick us and create another person. Suppose now you have noticed that and you are able to address that, discard that. Now mind may try to create a person from another angle. That also has to be addressed. So likewise, it's very difficult in a way. So this mind is so tricky in the sense that the craving, the ignorance is quite tricky. It's like you are trying to unentangle a wool, a thread. Suppose there is a entangled ball of thread, and here and there everything has become messed. And if you have to carefully unentangle it, you have to be very cautious. So if you pull the different thread, again the bunch may get contracted, or again they become tightened. And when you are trying to entangle from one direction, another direction may start to tighten. If you are trying to pull another thread, another side may get tightened. So likewise, the very careful business, very careful task, how to unentangle a kind of a fully complicated puzzle, fully complicated wool, similar kind of situation. So you have to be very cautious, very patient, again quite vigilant, and having clear comprehension. With that, you are carefully recognizing how the mind is making a self. Suppose that you have done something very good, and it has completed, and you did that, assume, in the morning while at the office, and now you come back home, and now you are sitting and relaxing. So at that time, there may be various thoughts coming to the mind, appreciating that task. So from the outlook, it looks good. I mean, no problem, because you did something good. And where there are various second thoughts are again and again coming, appreciating that task, applauding yourself. Now, if we continue, probably then you feel quite happy, elated, and you feel that I am the best person, I am the most generous person, I am the most selfless person. So likewise, now you start to appraise yourself. You start to praise yourself, promote yourself. Now, it started like with some innocent thought, but once you started to feed it, strengthen it, now you become even conceited. Now you become even proud of what you did. Now, this is the situation that we have to carefully handle. So once a good task, a wholesome deed has done, so in this practice, so we are not making that task as a promotion of a self, an individual. So this, in a way, quite different from the typical approach, where once a wholesome deed is done, so again and again we are thinking about it, appreciating it, and we are trying to enhance that wholesome deed. So mentally also we are sort of enhancing or encouraging, appreciating. As a result of that, the wholesome deed become enlarged or enhanced. So this is one approach. But in the Vipassana practice, once you understand it is not a real self, but it is a mind-made self, now you are trying to unentangle this whole story. You are not promoting a self, you are not creating a self, you are not making a self. Instead, you are kind of dissolving the self. In case a self is arising, you recognize it and you are trying to dissolve it. You are trying to discard it. And any thought which is promoting a self, you recognize and trying to discard it. It is not me, it is not mine, it is not myself. So likewise, this is, in a way, we have to do very patiently. And as you said, it is a difficult task. And when we are trying to entangle from one direction, another direction gets tangled. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. This one is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, would you please be able to explain the practical application of Sudanam Sarirya Yanya? Does this mean one has to conceptualize what might come in the way and keep it at the back as a memory remembering it? When you enter to that zone, the moment you conceptualize anything that became a world, so then would this be a remembering of the past? Would greatly appreciate if you can shed some light on this. Much merits and appreciation as always with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So, yes, it is correct. So, basically, we are make use of past memory, make use of past learned teaching skillfully here. So, it is not prohibited in a way. So, you are being prepared, you have learned something good, a very good advice, and now you keep it in mind. But, I mean, while practicing, you are not keeping it in mind. But when you enter to that region, to that area, so you remember that there is some sort of an advice given. When I am coming to this area, coming to this step, there is a very good advice given. So you immediately recognize it, you immediately remembers it, and you make use of it, and you get some strength from that advice to the mind, and you are having a very prepared mind to enter to this new region. And now once that strength being built, now you are not doing any proliferation about this teaching. Rather, you have taken some light from that teaching, and as a result the mind becomes stronger. Mind has properly, in a way sometimes it becomes properly balanced. Now with a good mood, we are getting to the new state. So make use of past incidents is not something prohibited. So it's a kind of a skillful mean what we are trying to do here. So there is a good advice given. So why not I am using it? So you are encountering the situation, you are getting closer to the situation, and you recognize or you remember that advice, and you are therefore strengthening your mind, preparing the mind further, and now you forget the advice, now you make use of it, and now you enter in the new situation. So therefore it is not harmful, rather it is make use of something correct, a very good advice for the betterment of our practice. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 7. This is mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Venerable Bhante, during my day-to-day practice, I observe more Vyapada tends to come when my mind shifts to the past and most of it related to parents. Although they are good people, I am shocked at times why they try to put us to a particular structure, try to embed responsibilities, why they don't appreciate local things, I mean Sri Lankan, and always appreciate foreign things. Why they buy the ideas of media? When I was 20 years old, my dad came to me and said, "Buddha, your ideas and viewpoints does not suit our social status." I told him, "You don't understand, Dad." Anyway, time passed and I started living alone from 28 years onward, and will continue to be solitude for the rest. I don't mean to condemn them or put them down. Appreciate that they have fed me and invested on my education. If not, self-sufficiency would not be possible. Dear Bhante, in mindful activities, these unsolved conflicts inside tend to come surfacing from time to time. I don't tell this to anyone, yet from my inside, I want to come to a resolution and be free so it will not obstruct my practice. Your advice is much appreciated. With
metta,
that's the end of the question.
Yeah, very good. So basically, I mean, understanding these preconceived ideas, say various memories, are quite important. And in a way, we have to have some compassion in our practice. Now, I mean, we need to recognize that we are not perfect, and similarly our parents. We are not perfect, similarly our friends or any other people. So, I mean, since I am also not perfect, so how I can expect my parents or whoever else to be perfect? And they also sometimes give maybe wrong instruction. But they are doing it with a good heart. So they consider, according to their understanding, okay, this is the correct view, this is the correct advice. So they are trying to help you. But maybe you assume that you know better, but this is not the correct advice. So you have the freedom to, if necessary, you can take a different approach. But they haven't purposely want to mislead you, rather they want to guide you. So if we can understand that correct motive, the good motive, the compassionate motive they had towards you, then we can actually appreciate their task or their goodwill. So this is in a way kind of a generation gap, we can say. So when you become a father, probably you may advise your children, and they also may not accept your advice. So that is obvious. So likewise, we always have sometimes face with different opinions. So how to handle these different opinions? So when people are giving many different opinions, are we able to control ourselves? Is it always necessary to win our opinion? Assume that you are participating into a meeting and different people have different opinions. And I also have my own opinion. So is it necessary to completely suppress others' opinions and always have to win my opinion? So is it the goal? Suppose you are the boss, you are the chief, and is it always necessary to accept by the others your opinion? So is it then going to have a good conversation? Now the mindfulness practice helps us to have kind of an unbiased, consideration to various opinions. So there we are not trying to promote a self. So it may be my opinion, it may be someone else's opinion, but we are trying to recognize the best approach for the betterment of the company, for the betterment of the society or to your own family. It may be coming from from a kid, maybe from your wife, from your husband, maybe your father, mother, whoever else. Now, so having that kind of a very acceptive mind is quite interesting. Then you have less friction. Because sometimes when another person is telling the correct thing, if I am having a lot of conceited mind, then I am not willing to accept that. Because it may show that I don't have a brilliant idea, but someone else is having a brilliant idea. So it may sort of harm my figure, harm my prepared role. So this is why we get upset, because I may be belittled because someone else is giving a brilliant idea than my idea. But on the other hand, so if we are able to understand, okay, there are different views, so this is the best view at the moment, so it was presented by someone else, so if I appreciate that, consider that also as my own idea, and try to win that idea, so then we are doing a kind of a collective agreement and we are implementing that idea, and then all of us may start to win. So similarly, so if we understand, okay, it is not kind of a self-promotion, rather someone else is giving me an advice. So if I am having unbiased mind to recognize its value, then definitely it may help. So therefore, so you don't need to condemn what your parents didn't. Rather, you can understand, okay, they have given a lot of advices for the best of their ability. And they have done out of compassion. So I can appreciate that. But it may not properly tally with the present norms, present culture or present technology. So likewise, there may be certain disparities. So that is in my hand now to understand their advice and to compare with the present norms and to get the best or the suitable approach, solution according to the situation. So likewise, if we can have kind of a balanced approach to ourselves and to the others with some compassion, I think that would help rather than always trying to win our thought or win our idea, our opinion. Yeah, we can go to the next question.
Question number 4 of 7, general question. Dear Swami Vansa, during the last few weeks in the Saravanya programs, I've heard that Venerable Dhammadeva Mahathera mentioned about being mindful on unmindful status once you reach a certain stage in the practice. Is this the same as expanding your mindfulness to encompass everything and being aware of the big picture, or a totally different technique? With metta, that's the end of the question.
No, actually, when you are developing mindfulness, you definitely will understand where I am not mindful. So it may automatically happen as our mindfulness expands, and so it's like maintaining kind of a ledger where you understand, okay, at this task I did mindfully, and on certain other task I was not mindful. So you recognize that. So now it's your duty is to further enhance mindfulness so that you are being able to mindful on other tasks as well. Now, even in the same task, you may understand, okay, there are certain areas. Now, I think you are referring Netula's report, and yesterday Bhante explained that you can be aware that where certain sensations are not available. When you are walking, say your heel is touching the ground, but not the ankle or whatever it is. So, I mean, you can pay attention to some non-sensation, or you can even select, say, insignificant area as well. There may be a gross sensation and there may be a subtle sensation. So the mind has the capacity, so you can select to which sensation that I am going to select, focus. So you may focus to an area where many sensations are available, or you may even focus to an area where there are no sensations at all. So it's a matter of focusing and to where I am going to focus. So this focusing ability, actually we are gaining through the mindful walking. Say when your left foot is touching, so we have to focus our attention onto the left foot. When your right foot is touching, we are focusing our attention to the right foot. So always the object is changing, but I am developing this ability. Even though the position, the place, the object is changing, so I have unbroken mindfulness, because I can focus to which is preferred. So therefore, these actually you will gain, so nothing to worry. So therefore, Dhammajiva has emphasized on that day, so you have this skill. Either you can focus to something known, and either you can focus to something unknown. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 7. Mindful sitting. Dharman Saranai Swami Mohansa, sitting meditation. Sat on the floor with legs stretched out while helping back against the wall. Started to concentrate on body and position and its liveliness, energy. Stayed knowing the complete body. Then the attention went to breathing. Could feel the in-breath touching the upper part of the throat and the out-breath touching upper part of nostrils. Felt the warmth of out-breath and coldness of in-breath. When continued, I could feel at the end of in-breath, it becomes empty, and same happened at end of out-breath. As I went on, breath started disappearing. Thereafter, I could see darkness, could not feel the body, yet I could see there's breathing going on. Again, with the feeling of breath touching the upper throat, I felt the breathing, and after a couple of breaths, went back to emptiness again. This happened several times. When the emptiness existed for a bit longer, I could feel like ants walking on sides of my neck. Then the thoughts came in about writing the report. Yet when the thoughts disappeared, the emptiness was still there. This happened several times. When thoughts came about, I started following the thought, needing to find what was the purpose of it. Then I felt that I had a desire to do, that I had a desire to see something different just before a thought. For example, thought of unknown picture coming up. When I was in emptiness a bit longer, I felt a desire to stay longer than that way, then a thought arose. Continued in that way for several cycles before I opened my eyes. Meditation time was 1 hour. Expecting your valuable advice on the path and practicing, Dharman Saranai. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think no harm. So this may happen again and again. So you trying to keep yourself in the emptiness, and again mind go and grasp something, you recognize it, the mindfulness inform you, and then you apply what kind of a technique, whatever kind of a technique. Say you are simply releasing it, simply becoming dispassionate about it, or you understand the sort of burden nature of the mind, and you are simply releasing it and coming back to the emptiness. So likewise, you have to continue the practice. So it is not that this is a single day practice. Till the whole life, we may have to do the same thing. Till we have the grasping. So till we have craving, we may do grasping. The mind will do grasping, and the mindfulness will show us or tell us, inform us the mind has gone and grasped. And once we apply wisdom, then again mind gets released and established back in the emptiness. So this is actually the practice. So you are doing it, you have to do it again and again. So, I mean, more and more you do it, so the mind become less prone to grasping. So there are various things available, attractive things available. Because of the continuous practice, now mind become dispassionate about them. Mind become not interested about those various attractive objects. Rather, mind prefers to be free from grasping. So in order to develop this non-grasping state of the mind, so we have to apply this practice again and again when mind go and grasped. So this grasping nature is the kind of inherent habit we have. So when we recognize it, so now we are not promoting that habit. Rather, we let it go and keep the mind free. So this is the practice we can say as, kind of patinissaggānupassana. So when the mind grasps, so we simply relinquish it and come back and establish ourselves on the emptiness. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 7. Mindful walking. Dear Swami Mansa, I decided to practice mindful walking in my bedroom as the other parts of the house were too noisy. It took me a while to fall into a mindful state, and I sometimes find myself being distracted by the objects around me. So does the lack of space affect my walking practice? That's the end of the question.
Sorry, Chatu, I didn't get it properly.
I'll read it out again. Dear Swami Mansa, I decided to practice mindful walking in my bedroom as the other parts of the house were too noisy. It took me a while to fall into a mindful state, and I sometimes found myself being distracted by the objects around me. Does the lack of space affect my mindful walking practice? That's the end of the question. Did it make sense?
Yes, yeah. It can, because once you have some considerable length on your foot, this walking path, so it develops, it helps to develop enough mindfulness and clear comprehension, because you have considerable space to walk. But when you have less space, so you feel somewhat confined, restricted, so mind is not opening up. So that is why, I mean, if you can go to some considerable distant or rather long walking path, so you have enough space to move freely, so the mind feel free, and you are experiencing some relaxed environment, and now you can move, walk, and develop mindfulness. And once the mindfulness has fairly developed, maybe you can spend in a little room, because already, you have somewhat developed mindfulness. So that's why I assume that from the walking path, you come back to the room and you do the sitting session. So there you close your eyes. So therefore it matters a little. So when your environment is somewhat restricted, so you are confined to a little apartment, little room, so it actually affects the practice. So that's why, I mean, if possible, you are asked to go to an open environment. Or it's the best is to a forest, to connect with the, natural environment, to connect with the nature. So that is where the mind come to its, home, we can say. Because typically what happens is with the, technological advancement, so people are moving away from the nature. But the mind is more comfortable, feeling more comfortable with the nature. So the mindfulness practice helps us to go back to that nature, appreciating the nature, being with the nature. And so that is more and more relaxing. And it is kind of healing process. And it helps to release all the tensions. And once you are seeing the sky, which is very far away, and it is boundless, so when you are seeing the sky which is far away and boundless, so that mind also become fairly expanded and boundless. So all the tensions are released, so mind become fairly expanded. So likewise, there are many benefits you can gain while being in this natural environment. So therefore, it actually matters. Yes.
Abante, we have one more question. Is it okay if we go over time?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Question 7, it's a theory question on today's sermon. Dear Abante, regarding today's Dhamma sermon of being alone and living like a rhinoceros horn, after practicing several years, my own experience is that when I'm secluded, it is easy to focus and practice well, which happens naturally in the silent retreats. However, once we engage with others, it is quite evident how the qualities develop, how the qualities that were developed vanishes due to defilements and hidden tendencies. If we try to live like a rhino from the onset, how can we identify these hidden keles, which can be the most heavy and burdensome part, like the hidden part of an iceberg? What are the indications and signs of the practice that we can use to decide now it is time to live like a rhinoceros horn? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, it's a very good question, very practical question. So basically, that balance we have to find. So we need to have some seclusion as well as we need to have some association. So as you correctly mentioned, so while being in the seclusion, we can actually develop a fair amount of concentration, and we can even attach to that concentration, and we start to hate other people, we start to hate even the other associations, and we are sort of attached to the seclusion. So this is another, what you call a defilement we have. So seclusion is there, we can make use of it, and once enough concentration is developed, so we have to develop wisdom. And in order to develop wisdom, we need some amount of association as well. So as you correctly mentioned, while being in the seclusion, you cannot recognize various defilements, because the concentration is very high, and if your mind is quite attached to that concentration, you are spending hours in that concentration, and because of the concentration, defilements may subside, defilements may suppressed. Now you even misunderstand that you have achieved something, but unfortunately it's a misunderstanding, it's an overestimation rather a reality. So that is why once we are able to develop some amount of mindfulness and concentration, we have to continue to develop wisdom, and that not only have secluded practice, but it has some associated practice as well. So you have to deal with your friends, you have to deal with your companions, say at your office and at your whoever else, and during that association you have to see the mind. So the Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana has to be very practical. It is not 100% secluded practice, rather you have to face with the situation, you have to face with the challenges, you have to deal with other people, you have to move with other people and see how your mind reacts. So if your mind reacting and you are taking decisions impulsively, and you are say hating and blaming and all these things happen, so that indicates the mind is not yet free from defilements, definitely. Even though while in secluded you are practicing metta for many hours and you have metta for the whole universe, and once you get onto the car and start to drive, so when another person overtakes you, you start to hate him, you start to blame him once the other person cut off. So where is the metta which you have practiced? So this is where we have to be quite practical in our practice. So these actually happen, these understandings actually happen with the help of other people. So they are in a way the teachers. Unknowingly they are doing various things, but if we are in the proper mood, if we are in the proper attitude, we can understand how our mind reacts to these situations. So therefore, being with others, associating others, And at that time, observing how our mind reacts, how our mind behaves, is a must in Vipassana practice. Yeah.
That ends the questions for today. We've gone a bit over time, so we'll finish up. I'd first like to thank Bhante for giving up valuable time and also passing our merits for running this program, as well as the organizers and people seen and unseen participating with the program, and lastly to the participants, because without you there would be no. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Therwan Sarnai.
Yeah, Therwan Sarnai, Sukhi Hotu.